the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to another installment of the Mississippi Rice Podcast, brought to you by Mississippi Crop Situation. Today we're going to have Dr. Trent Irby on talking about soybean desiccations, because soybean desiccation and off-target drift goes hand-in-hand with soybeans and rice fields this time of year. And Trent's out there beating the doors down today, so he's not going to be in the studio. He's going to be calling in from his truck.
So where are you at today, Trent?
Well, ironically enough, I'm driving through Sunflower County. I wish I could get over there and get in the studio with you.
Well, we appreciate you jumping on here with short notice. I know I caught you off guard when I called you like that, so we appreciate you taking time out of your day for it.
Man, it's all good.
So do you think we've sprayed any desiccants on soybeans yet, Trent?
If we have, it's been very limited. I haven't noticed any. I've not talked to anybody about it. Some of our super early planted beans and probably those dry land acres are starting to get to the point where folks may be considering it, just to get a jump and get the combine moving a little bit faster.
Did we have any group threes in the state planted on any scale that might be coming off now that would have got desiccated in the last week or so?
We have a couple of pockets of group threes planted and just a couple of places in the middle part of the Delta. There's some others scattered around here and there, but not a whole lot of group threes in the grand scheme of things. Most of our stuff's going to be in that 4.4 to 4.8 range, 4.9 range.
So at least in the Delta, where we grow soybean in close proximity to rice, if we're in that 4.4 to 4.6 range, how close are we to actually making some applications of harvest aids on soybean?
Well, it depends. You know, I don't think that a harvest aid is necessarily a standard practice. It's definitely become more popular in the last 4 or 5 years. Me personally, I would kind of let the weather and things like that dictate the need for it. The crop's not drying down how it needs to be drying down. Sure, there's a benefit to it. We got bad weather coming in the forecast. There's another good use for it. But where we're sitting today, you know, most of that earliest planted stuff that's in that maturity range is probably sitting around R6, R6.5. So we're, you know, another week or so away probably from seeing a lot of harvest aid temptations anyway. A lot of applications start going out maybe in the next few weeks.
Trent, you mentioned the weather, and right now, I don't know, the weather's been kind of fluky this week with some fog and things like that early in the morning. But last year, I felt like we desiccated a lot of soybean acres last year. And then, you know, remembering back to the what was going on with the weather at that time, seemed like we were catching a lot of rain. So do you think that those acres getting treated last year with the desiccant was reflective of the weather, or was it just a planned application?
I really feel like what went on last year is a little bit of a combination of both of those scenarios, because we had pockets that didn't get all that rain that we saw in August, but, you know, a lot of the part around in Washington County and the 82 corridor was seeing a lot of rain. We had a lot of red-banded stink bug issues, so there were a lot of things going on that would motivate a producer to you know, speed the crop along and get the harvest and get the crop out a little bit faster. And certainly, I think last year, a lot of it probably did have to do with the weather, but it's probably a combination of both. Being anxious to get the combine moving and get a head start on some of these acres, we've got a lot of beans to get out in a short period of time.
So Trent, you say that, and you say we're increasing our desiccations, and it's kind of become standard practice in a lot of areas in the Mid-South. But where are we at with soybean price, and how might that influence if we need that desiccation or not?
Well, this year, you know, in my mind, it's definitely different than what we've had the last two or three in terms of both environment today anyway, and certainly the market price is lower than we've seen in a while. So for me, I would have a hard time making it a standard application across all acres just based on, you know, the lower market price. And you know, there's not going to be the return on the investment, so to speak, for a harvest aid is going to be the harvest efficiency. It's not going to magically put new more bushels in the combine, but it'll protect what's there and let you get it out in the right circumstances. So depending on, I guess, what these 10-day forecasts continue to look like over the next few days as we get the crop a little bit more mature, you know, we'll see big need for it, or if the crop begins to dry down on its own, or what's going on. The other factor I think that weighs into is we have a lot of new varieties out there. I think it's anybody's guess of how some of these newer varieties are going to react in terms of the way they dry down. It's common to see different genetics react differently to the dry down, to the maturity process. Some just stay greener longer than others. So anytime we get into a situation where it's just going to stay green, you know, that would definitely warrant a harvest aid application.
Trent, what are the standard treatments that we're using for harvest aids now?
Paraquat is going to be a standard, and sometimes we see paraquat tank mixed with sodium chlorate, just depending on how that application is made or what the need is within those given fields. And then Sharpen also is an option that goes out probably on a lower percentage of the acres compared to those other two. But
well, I'd just make a pitch for Sharpen right now, Trent, because, you know, it doesn't hurt our rice based on our research with off-target herbicide movement.
Well, Sharpen got a label, I can't remember now, 4 years ago, I believe, 3 or 4 years ago, and we've looked at it in comparison with these other standard treatments that have been around for quite a long time. And in terms of performance, they're all about equal. Once you get a week or so out after application, they all do an adequate job in terms of drying down a crop, getting it ready for harvest.
All right, so the big question is always pre-harvest interval. What are the difference between those two treatments?
All three of those products that we just talked about, when applied, you know, individually, they have different pre-harvest intervals for sure. So sometimes we'll see a tank mix variation of some of those three products, but you know, when applied independently of one another, there's definitely a I can't remember. I think it's one of them sharpens 3 day pre-harvest interval out to 2 weeks for paraquat products. So yeah, pre-harvest interval will play a factor in that decision as well as price. In terms of harvest days of soybeans, there's a lot of different needs out there. So I guess every field, the decision is kind of independent of one another. So anytime anybody has any questions about it, give any of us a shout and we'll go from there.
We brought in two guys that many of you may know. They've been graduate students here at Stoneville for a long time. Mr. Justin McCoy, who is getting his PhD in my program, and Mr. Ben Lawrence, who's getting his PhD in Jason's program. So, Justin, how long have you been here?
So this will be my sixth summer here at Stoneville. I started getting my master's under Dr. Golden, and I'm finishing my PhD. This will be hopefully my last year of research in the field.
You worked 1 year before you actually started on your master's degree too, didn't you?
Yes, sir, that's correct. That's where I came up with the six. I did have 1 year where I wasn't able to didn't get any research in that year. I kind of learned the ropes before.
That was a red shirt year.
I guess that's what they call it these
gray
days.
Gray shirt,
seemed
probably.
Like, yeah. Seemed like a long year to me.
He would have exhausted eligibility that year, so we'll say it's a gray shirt year. Is that right?
Bobby had to make sure that you were going to be able to find your way.
He was from the hills.
That's prairie, actually. Ben, on the other hand, is from the hills.
Ben is from the hills. No question about that.
Just where you're born, man.
You hail from the land of the rebel, don't you?
Well, not technically. I grew up in Lafayette County, but I went to school in New Albany.
You could throw a rock.
I could throw a rock, but I got my groceries in New Albany.
Okay, well, that's...
That's a pass?
I guess that's right, yeah.
All right, so Ben, tell us how long you've been here.
I've been here as long as Justin, I guess. I got to start on research when I first got here 6 or 7 years ago, even though Justin's a year younger than me.
So you didn't have to redshirt?
No, I just started playing time.
How does that make you feel, Justin?
You know, not very good, especially when we're sitting here talking about it in this room. I try not to think about it very often.
Well, guys, y'all have probably seen a lot of the research that's come out of these two guys' program. Most of what they've been working on is dealing with paraquat drift on rice, anywhere from emergence all the way to putting that rice in a combine. And we're going to talk to you a little bit about that today, since we're about to start desiccating a lot of soybeans here lately.
Yeah, there's a field, you know, we saw that field yesterday that I was surprised that it had, if it was going to get desiccated, I was surprised that it hadn't already been sprayed. And then there's some strip trials out here close to the station that have already been cut, so the time's at hand.
yeah, we're closing in on the fire to a 2018 growing season that was met with a lot of peculiar weather. Here we are.
Yeah. So, Ben, give us just a brief, you know, what you're doing. And we know you're doing a lot of stuff in addition to paraquat, but just kind of focus on the paraquat component of your project. Just give us a brief update on what you're doing.
Yeah, so I started this project, I guess this has been my fourth season working on paraquat on rice. And I'm just applying the a drift rate to different growth stages of rice from emergence.
All right, so hold up there, Ben. You said you're applying a drift rate.
Not technically. It's in the bounds of a drift rate.
But what is that rate? So you know, and I think it's important to differentiate that now, because when Justin talks a little bit later, he's going to say drift rate too, but y'all are working on two different rates.
Right. So the rate I'm working with is 1/10 of the recommended use rate of paraquat for a burn down application, which would be 4.8 ounces is what I'm applying to rice at.
Which is 3 pints. The 1X rate would be 3 pints of Gramoxone, and we don't necessarily differentiate formulations, but that's what it, you know, what most people are familiar with is Gramoxone.
I'm applying paraquat anywhere from emergence to panicle differentiation. It's that 1/10 is the upper bound of a drift rate. So I guess if you want to call it a cross a turn row drift scenario, there hadn't been a lot of research, if any, on paraquat on rice. So we chose the worst case scenario.
And your project was brought out of the multiple field calls that we receive early in the season. And, you know, if anybody has seen my rice updates we've given the last couple years, there's always a picture of Jason on his hands and knees in a rice field looking at paraquat on rice. So, Jason, tell us how we come out with Ben's research.
The year or so before you started in your current role, Bobby, as a rice specialist, the cases of paraquat drift on rice in the spring and had really picked up. And depending on what hat I'm wearing, I kind of kicked myself, because I was one of the huge advocates for paraquat in that burn down application, you know, at planting on soybeans or on cotton, to make sure that we had all the Palmer amaranth under control when those crops went in the ground. And then naturally, you know, with poor weather conditions that time, that stuff's moving off target. And our early planted rice, you know, oftentimes we have rice in the, you know, 1 to 2, 3, or even 4-leaf stage when soybeans are going in the ground. So we got, you know, emerged rice that's getting exposed to some off-target paraquat movement. So, you know, we developed Ben's project, you know, based, like you said, based on those calls that we had gone and worked in the previous 2 or 3 years.
So I think the glowing nugget I heard in there is you said you think all the paraquat drift is your fault.
I would say I am partially responsible for it. I think I'm also partially responsible for working through it.
So it's a problem that you may have helped cause, but now you're solving. So it's come
full
circle.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't intentional, though. I didn't create it on purpose to solve it on purpose, because I don't know that we've solved it. I think we've learned a lot and helped a lot of people, but we definitely haven't solved it yet.
But you can't discount putting paraquat in that burn down. That's taken us a lot of places.
Absolutely. No, it's required.
All right, Ben, back to you. So what have you seen out of some of these paraquat applications? What's the worst time within the timings that you've worked at that we just really set on rice hard?
So what my research has shown is that the later we delay these applications of paraquat on rice, the worse it gets. That panicle differentiation timing is really hard on rice when exposed to Gramoxone, but they all have some negative consequences associated with it.
So the delays in maturity, when do we experience, I know it's going to reflect yield loss, but when do we really begin to see a delay in maturity too?
Well, at any of those applications, there's some delay in maturity. Just kind of like with the yield, the later it is, the more drawn out that delay in maturity can be. You know, those very early post timings, which would be 2 to 3 leaf rice. Well, really the spiking treatments, which would be 1 leaf rice or spiking, can have comparable yields to the non-treated, but it delays maturity up to a week. So, and that can go on out to those panicle differentiation timings, never got to 50% heading, which is our indicator of maturity.
And so, you know, I always talk when I talk about paraquat on rice, I'm always talking about the fact that, you know, the rice just, it doesn't grow and it doesn't grow and it doesn't grow, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks after it gets exposed. But then, you know, we're carrying on through to the end. So even if we get pretty good recovery, we've still got some pretty significant delays in heading that can really compromise our harvest schedule.
Right. And, you know, depending on the year, if, you know, it's a big hurricane season, that week difference could mean the difference in getting your crop out or not.
Nobody likes to cut down rice.
No, I definitely don't like to cut down rice. And leading into that, now that we're into getting close to rice harvest, I've seen a lot of things on Twitter the last several days kind of promoting your research, Justin. Miss Vicky Boyd out in California sent a tweet out the other day that kind of had a lot of your stuff in it. Jason, you want to kind of talk about that with Justin for a little while?
Justin, I guess just similar to what Ben did, just give us an overview of what you're doing and kind of how it complements, you know, Ben's work.
So I guess I was the lucky one to pick up kind of where Ben left off. My research is directed towards looking at harvest age drift on late season reproductive rice stages. So we begin similar to Ben with a 1/10 of the labeled harvest aid rate, spraying at 50% heading.
All right, interrupt just like on Ben. Tell us what that rate is, just so everybody knows that there is a difference between what Ben's doing and what you're doing.
Absolutely. So the labeled harvest aid rate, 1/10 of that would be 2.5 ounces of gramoxone.
All right, so we're basing that off the 1 pint rate that we gramoxone that we use as a desiccant rate. Just so I just want everybody to be clear on that these are really low rates that we're dealing with.
Yes, sir, absolutely. So we, like I said, we begin at the 50% heading growth stage, and this is carried out for the next one application per week up until 1 week before harvest. So our last application, we make the application, and 1 week later we're harvesting the crop. As we looked at this, we've also looked at other desiccants along with paraquat that are commonly used and labeled in Mississippi. And we've also looked at cultivar differences. We looked at 2 hybrid cultivars, 2 long grain and 1 medium grain variety cultivars.
All right, so just briefly, have you seen a difference in those cultivars?
So, yes, we have seen a difference in the cultivars. The hybrid cultivars seem to tolerate the drift rates at a much greater level than that of the inbred cultivars. Differences in the hybrid cultivars are minimal to none, even with drift rates at that 50% heading growth stage. However, with the inbred cultivars, we see yield decreases anywhere from 10 to 30%.
Just so people are clear, even though there are differences in these varieties and then between the varieties and the hybrids, you're still getting a pretty significant level of injury even on those hybrids, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct. Visible injury with the paraquat is around 20%, although it is less in the inbred cultivars. And you do see a yield decrease as well with the hybrid cultivars. It's just much greater with the inbred cultivars.
Yeah, so differences are relative. Just because they're there doesn't mean you want to, you know, go plant this one and then not worry about how the paraquat gets applied in fields that are adjacent to it.
Absolutely.
So, Justin, you know, you talked about those varietal differences. Tell us a little bit about those timing differences. When would you consider rice to be safe from paraquat drift based on your data?
So when would I consider rice to be safe? Rice is completely safe when it's in the combine, in my mind. With the data that we've looked at, paraquat affects rice yield all the way up to 1 week before harvest, and which is pretty significant in my mind. Common knowledge, one would think that at those later stages when you've drained your rice and it's sitting out there, you know, it's almost drying down. However, we still see a yield decrease all the way up to that point, which is significant in my head because that's a long time for rice to be sensitive to off-target movement. It's out there for a long growing season, and then you could possibly have a lot of soybean acres desiccated around your crop during that time.
And I think that's the, you know, progression of the research program too. You know, we started your stuff a year or two after Ben's because we got to Ben's at PD, and then the desiccant applications, we think, well, we don't have anything out there to evaluate how those if we're drifting to desiccant applications, how that's affecting the rice. So I think this will be something to complement what you've done is the why. I mean, you think if rice is just drying down, why does desiccating some of that canopy still influence yield? But it obviously has because you've done it, you know, for 3 years now.
Well, yeah, and you go back to some of the work that you did prior to coming to Mississippi when you were still in Louisiana, and not a weed scientist, but an agronomist, you did a lot of desiccant work that suggested that even applying labeled desiccants can influence your yield.
So we looked at paraquat as a desiccant, and naturally that never went anywhere. I mean, it's a food crop, and those paraquat formulations are labeled as poisons, so that didn't go anywhere, but we checked it out. So sodium chlorate would be the primary desiccant treatment that we use for rice, and we had a big difference, you know, between 3 days and 7 day prior to harvest application timing. So if you're going to desiccate it on Friday, you better have the combine serviced up and ready to go on Monday with a completely clear forecast, because the difference between getting in the field and cutting it at 3 days versus 7 days is pretty big, especially when you start to talk about milling.
I think, too, if you look at the advancement in the breeding lines, a lot of the rice that we're growing in the Mid-South today is a little bit different than the rice we grew, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, or maybe 25 years ago, where now when you look at a rice field, all those heads are sitting down in the canopy with those leaves above it, whereas back in, you know, 20 years ago, you'd see that head pop out above it. So it was a lot easier to harvest rice back then and not get as much trash in the combine with it. So do you think
that? And that's exactly right. You know, if I remember correctly, that desiccant work that we did when I was in Crowley, you know, one of them was definitely kokajree. You know, and kokajree made a pretty flat tabletop canopy, and most of the panicles were right on top, kind of leaned over a little bit. But if I remember right, I think we had whales in there too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whales had a big fat flag leaf, and it kind of stuck up, you know, above the panicle. But the panicle didn't sit low, you know, two-thirds down in the canopy like it often can with some of the hybrid cultivars that we're growing now. So I think there's definitely a place for desiccating that canopy, you know, especially, you know, depending on the variety, needing to get down in there too.
All right, guys, so I appreciate all the work y'all been doing with us, and we hope that y'all feel like you've learned something looking at all this paraquat stuff. I know we have.
You know, I've learned a lot, and it's come with that opportunity that I probably wouldn't have had anywhere else, you know, coming from the hills, as people like to say. There's not a lot of rice grown in Lafayette County, so it was a unique experience for
me. There's not any rice grown in Lafayette County.
Well, yeah. Then. It gave me a unique experience that to work in a crop that I was really unfamiliar with until now.
Well, don't feel bad, Ben, because I don't even know what county Columbus is in, but they don't have any rice over there.
I think it's Alabama. I think it's almost Alabama.
It's Lowndes. It's the star of the state.
Well, guys, just to reiterate what Bobby said, I really appreciate all the work that y'all have done in the time that you've been here. So y'all have been huge assets to our program, and so thank you for all your hard work.
You got any parting shot there, Justin?
Well, I guess I just want to say thank y'all, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, guys, well, we appreciate y'all joining us again for another Rice episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. And like always, if y'all need us or need us to come look at a field, just give us a shout and we'll be there as quick as we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.